Coming up, we welcome a new member to the Pod family. Todd Lewis is joining me this week. We'll talk about the Memorial Tournament and all 33 seconds he has spent in his house over the last month. I think that's the number he just told me. Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast presented by Callaway Golf. Did you know new father John Rahm almost never hits full shots, 8-iron through lob wedge? He prefers to hit three-quarter shots that fly low, so a higher spinning ball is a necessity for control. That's what he got in ChromeSoft X for his golf ball. Are you aware of the setup that U.S. Women's Open champion Michelle Wee West will use this week at Olympic Club? Do you know why PGA champion Phil Mickelson uses a low loft driver combined with a long shaft? If you like equipment notes like these, you're going to love Callaway Golf's new World of Wonder website. Johnny Wonder takes you inside the tour truck and the bags of staffers on all the world tours and inside the Eli Callaway Performance Center for all things equipment and fitting. What the pros are doing may just help you shoot your best score. Well, more so T-Lew than me, but please check out CallawayGolf.com/World of Wonder today. T-Lew, how are you, pal?
I'm good, my man. How are you?
Out of breath after that one.
You did pretty good for a non-host. That was really, really good job.
You're the professional here. I should have just had you do it and made it very, very easy. So it's about 33 seconds you've been home this year, right?
Give or take.
So PGA, yeah. Connecticut for last week for Golf Central, and then now we're both here at the Memorial Tournament.
We are at the Memorial, then I fly back to Connecticut to host Golf Central, and then I fly to Torrey Pines, the U.S. Open, then I fly home to Orlando, and the very next day my wife goes on a girls' trip, so it seems like she's trying to avoid me.
So, I have found in 22 years of marriage that that's best.
It's best for my wife to avoid me?
It's best for my wife to avoid me. I can't speak to your relationship. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and avoid doing that. I am excited about having you on. Before we get to that, we have a segment at the end of each one of these podcasts. It's usually what's lab cooking. And he talks for 5 or 10 very, very boring minutes about what he's going to grow that weekend. So give me an idea of what you haven't been home. So I know it's not grilling, but give me what's in the kitchen.
What's in my kitchen right now? Or like, sure. What do I like to cook?
Sure.
I am good with good caveman food. Like I can't grill and simple stuff like a potato. I'm all right. But you use measuring cups and all that. No, I mean, it's dangerous for everyone involved.
No good.
So steaks, chicken, stuff like that.
See, Lavner would keep talking for another 15 minutes about what he was going to smoke. He would go into great detail. Drop all the expensive names of all the grills that he owns. So you've come up way short.
Okay. So I don't know. My palate isn't that sensitive. So I am not, I don't feel like I need to buy $2,000 worth of smokers and Traegers and all these things. I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't seem that big a gap between something that I could grill compared to smoking. Am I wrong there?
Yeah, there's a huge gap, but I'm going to go ahead and let Lavner listen to this. He'll be
in. Well, that's fine. It is what it is. So go ahead. Well, yeah, I'll make him Captain Caveman.
No, he'll definitely be in touch because trust me, he is very much Captain Caveman. You and I just sat through, and I didn't even realize this until you tweeted it and actually stole the picture that you were looking at that you took for social media. It was the first in-person press conference since March of 2020. And it was Jack Nicklaus, of course. And I guess my first takeaway was, of course, it had to be Jack, but you didn't realize how much you missed these until I was like 10, 15 minutes into this one. And Jack is telling stories the way he always tells stories. And you realize that there is a connection that has been lost over the last 12 plus months because you don't have that interaction where he's bouncing questions back at you as you're trying to ask him questions. It was interesting give and take all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You and I both stand in front of a mechanism to do a live shot to talk, even though millions, we hope, are watching. Still, you're just looking at a camera. You're looking at a camera operator behind it and a tripod. But you and I have also been in front of live audiences, and there's just a completely different energy, obviously. And I think the same is true with these press conferences. I feel like you get more information out. I think it's more enjoyable for the person who's talking at the podium or at the press conference, who's the subject, and obviously for us as well, because we can we can get a more honest, truthful answer. I mean, it's human interaction. Absolutely. You and I have been in Tiger press conferences, and you know, they can be fun and entertaining. All right, let's say Phil Mickelson. All right, we'll go with Phil Mickelson. Now, those are fun
and entertaining.
Those are engaging. I mean, he's holding court, and you know, you get gold, Jerry Gold. And so I miss that. It seems like the tour obviously is steering in that direction to get these live press conferences happening again. And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, don't you like them?
No. And again, it took me about 10 minutes to realize not only how much I missed it, but how much was missing from the process. Let's just call it however the stew is made. And it's not pretty sometimes. And like behind the scenes isn't pretty sometimes, but there is something to be said for, if I was on a Zoom call with Jack today, there's no way you're getting the answers out of him that you end up, because with Jack, and with a lot of people, there has to be the interaction of making sure they understand your question, making sure there's clarity, everything that goes along with that.
I mean, and also, I mean, we talked about this a lot, and I just, you know, we experience it a lot. It's a trust factor too. I mean, sometimes you're not seeing who's asking the questions on these Zoom meetings, and, you know, the subjects know you, they know me, they know Doug Ferguson of the AP, they know Steve DiMeglio of USA Today, and so on and so on. So, you know, there's that, not only the trust, but a comfort level that makes them more revealing, as opposed to, again, sitting in a webcam and not really understanding who you're talking to sometimes. So, I think the viewer or the reader or the listener benefits more with having these in-person press conferences.
And I wanted to ask, this is a completely media related question, so I apologize in advance, because I do want to get to Jordan Spieth and talk about does he have any Sunday issues that we need to talk about. I want to get to this golf course, Muirfield Village, that has been through a dramatic transformation. But before we get there, just from a media perspective, you know, you have been watching this in France at Roland Garros. Naomi Osaka, she withdrew from the tournament after deciding earlier in the week that she did not want to give interviews because there's anxiety there. And I actually felt it was very, very brave of her to actually own this in a very, very public way. And the whole story, I don't know about you, but it made me sort of realize that you're on the other end of this thing that can be very damaging to people. I don't think either one of us have ever gone into an interview thinking, I'm going to ask a mean question and see if it bothers a person. I don't know of anybody that's really ever done that. However, in the course of us doing our jobs, I'm sure there have been questions that we have asked that has probably caused some sort of anxiety in the person we were asking the questions to. And what Osaka has now sort of brought to the forefront, and she was fined $15,000 for not doing a post-round interview because that's the rules. And then she decided to withdraw from the tournament afterwards. So it's almost like a weird game of chess now. But I'm wondering, and the guy who immediately came to mind is coming into the media center tomorrow, Bubba Watson. I'm wondering if this is going to start a larger trend across sports, because there is something to be said for, there's parts of an athlete's persona that they don't want to be cracked. And in this particular case, she's going to make a stand.
You know, I haven't thought about that. That's an interesting point. It's interesting in our sport and in tennis as well, I guess, in the fact that they are non-team members. They're freelance contractors. But there's also a delicate dance of, like, you know, they make money on sponsorships and endorsements, and, you know, those companies want them out there as well. And so, and talking and doing things, it's interesting. I haven't really thought about it until this issue came up with this tennis player. But I promise I would be respectful to that. I would understand that. I don't know how malicious the tennis media is. I don't really see anybody. Maybe you know it more than me. I don't see anybody in golf media that's as attacking. No, I mean, there may be some questions that are fair but tough, which I think is different than someone who has an agenda. It's interesting. I don't know. I don't know how this is all going to play out. I'm more interested to see how the governing bodies for tennis, you know, of all the Grand Slam events, how they handle this more than how we as media members handle.
Sure, because it's going to reach a tipping point, right? I mean, you have one of the game's stars has decided to make this stand. And again, like the bravery that it's taken for someone who calls herself an introvert, who clearly says she's not comfortable in a public setting. And again, my mind immediately went to Bubba Watson, who, and I was talking with his manager about this morning, because I wanted to try to get Bubba's thoughts on this, because he has addressed the same things that, look, he has issues. But I asked his manager, and we both know him, and I said, do you think that there's ever been a time in Bubba's career where there has been something said in a media press conference that has gotten to him to the point where I don't know what the manifestation of that would be? If it would be, I can't sleep at night, or I'm nervous now on a golf course, or I can't eat, whatever the case may be. And he actually said, he goes, no, I think it's good for him. Like in Bubba's case, it actually makes him better because he's able to talk about it in a public setting where normally he probably wouldn't feel comfortable. So I do think there's varying degrees of this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you saw this. We ran in the Masters, but I did a sit down conversation with him. And he talked about his anxiety and depression that he fought. And a lot of that was because, and I can understand why this tennis player is feeling this way too, because there is a microscope more on you as an individual player than a team player, I feel like. And the measurement that you have, the expectations internally and externally, I mean, you're measured by a number. I mean, you're defined as a number, whether that number is what you shot that day, where you are in that tournament, where your world ranking is. And sometimes some players can see that as that being their worth, their value in life is that number. So absolutely. There's anxiety there. And it's just a matter of how you manage.
Is there an obligation for a professional athlete to give a slice of yourself after every round of golf, after every tennis match, after every game, that you're going to have to go and sit down and answer these questions? Because I've run into this over the course of my career where, well, he has to talk after this round. And a lot of times that's been Tiger has to talk after this round for whatever reason. And I did the math on it once. And by comparison, the number of times that he has given interviews compared to the next closest person, which at that time I did the column, it wasn't even close. It was Phil. So, and I just kind of based this entirely on transcripts, which is sort of just a loose, it's like a Nielsen rating for this particular thing.
Let me guess. It's probably 8 or 10 to 1.
At least it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 3,000. It was like 28,000 interviews over the course of his career, starting back in 97. And again, this is just the transcripts compared to Phil, who was again second on the list at 300. So it's not even close.
300.
I mean,
that's amazing. Yeah.
But we think we're owed this in a lot of ways. It's sort of, I mean, this is our hammer and our nail, right? This is what we do. This is, we pack the lunch pail and go to work. And this is what we build off these stories. So in my mind, yes, it'd be easy for you and I to sit here and say, they do need to give us something. And I'm sure the PGA Tour is thinking to themselves, they do need to give something up after a round, good round, bad round, indifferent. However, I don't know, this has created such an interesting scenario where if it's a detriment to the actual athlete, either physically or mentally, I think there is a conversation to be made that maybe they don't owe us anything.
Yes. I could see that point. I mean, your question to me was after each and every round. I don't necessarily think it has to be each and every round. Absolutely. I do think though that, all right, let's say Jordan's a bad example. Let's say Jason Duffner runs away from this tournament here.
I feel like you're typecasting now, but go on.
All right, let's say Jordan Spieth.
No, I thought Duffner was a good one.
All right, so he wins, and he feels and breaks the tournament record here, shoots 59 in the process, in Jack's tournament, and just says, I don't really want to talk on Sunday. Are you okay with that?
No, absolutely not. Right. No, because we have stories to tell. However, the flip side of that is Hideki Matsuyama sat down and spoke after he won the Masters this year, and we still had stories to tell. However, in that particular case, because there's a language barrier, they weren't very good stories. Through no fault of his own, but they weren't very good stories. So if you want me to make an argument or why, yes, there should be some sort of, you do have to come up and give your pound of flesh. Let's just call it that.
Well, first off, I feel like you're kind of like, you don't mind me saying, I don't really think it's not an interrogation. I mean, your pound of flesh. I mean, he won the Masters. I mean, for goodness sakes. If I won the Masters, if I won any tournament in a seven-figure check, I don't think I'd have any problem talking. I mean, you sound like you're getting ready to, you know, put his emotions in a vice and squeeze.
No, but this is what, and by the way, there's a rookie on the podcast. You can't just stop the proceedings and completely hang up. Like, you can't slam Fair on point. The brakes of the podcast as a rookie. Give this one or two more tries, right?
Go ahead with your pound of flash, rather.
No, absolutely not. Again, as a media type, I would say, and you and I both have covered other sports, and I've even worked on in the newsroom. So it's a vastly different realm here where we're not coming into this media center looking to create an issue. Like, we would rather tell good stories. We would rather tell the stories of the players and their accomplishments. Sometimes you do have to ask the hard questions. I don't know that every player looks at it that way, though.
Again, I think this is such a broad stroke that I feel like sometimes athletes, their managers, say the media. I feel like these players can distinguish each individual media person and will respond accordingly. You're a great writer. You're an insider. And so you know the fabric of these players, and they know that you know. So I feel like you asking a question as opposed to somebody that these players haven't seen, but maybe just once a year. I mean, look, like reporters here this week from the local stations, local newspapers, they don't see them that well, or many times rather. And so I'm not slamming their profession. I'm sure they're outstanding reporters and storytellers and informers, but these players just don't see them. And so they're not going to be as comfortable as opposed to being with you or me or whomever. And so I don't like this broad stroke of media. I think they're all individuals, and we're all individuals. Just like we don't say players. We just talk about we know which players and how they tick and how they're different. All players are blank. I just don't think that's cool.
All right, I've filibustered long enough on this. What are your thoughts on the insider tag? You can go straight pass or fail if you like. I'm just curious if you have a no, neither one, neither.
Are you talking about a golf insider or just?
Yes, just insiders in general. Like, what's the difference between an insider and a reporter, I guess, is what I'd want to know.
At the Golf Channel?
Anywhere, and just in general, I am not.
Let's say, for instance, ESPN. I mean, they cover every sport. So I feel like Chris Mortensen is an insider for football. So there you go. So he's an insider for football. He's someone who knows the sport, knows the players, knows the management teams, knows the families, da da da. And if there's something that's breaking in that world, you go to Chris Mortensen, the insider for ESPN that covers all sports. So yes, I do feel like there is space for an insider. Is that your question?
Yeah, I just wanted to wind you up. You know that. It was a very inside joke. Who does not particularly care for the term insider. So if you'll notice that sometimes when he and I will do hits on TV, he will he'll extend the title out as much as he possibly can, just to kind of lean into the point.
Yeah, golfchannel.com senior writer,
father three,
Marine contributor and insider Rex Hager.
I'll get to the golf stuff. 73 on Sunday from Jordan Spieth at Colonial. Concerning or not?
No. Look, he's got 8 top tens in his last 11 starts. That includes a victory. I think that this will continue. I still think he's growing. I still think he's trying to get better. He's not at a stopping point. It's like, whew, I'm there. This will motivate him a little more to be a little more focused, to be a little more determined in that final round. But no, I think he's trending way too positively to let this be a spike strip on the road to success.
And it's hard for me to argue against this. I'm going to, just because that's what makes the podcast kind of go round. That's the engine that makes this work. But listening to him just now in his pre-tournament press conferences, you're right. He is, as far as, if I'm going to coin the Philadelphia Phillies phrase and say the process, he's 75% into it. And I'm just picking a number there. But he's clearly not where he wants to be. There's clearly things that he wants to shore up. That being said, of his 11 Sunday rounds in 2021, just one of them has been in the 60s. And he ranks 114th on the PGA Tour in Sunday scoring average. That, to me, is an indication, like, and I've spoken with sports psychologists about this. I've spoken with statisticians about this. There's something to be said for that. If you're playing really well on Thursday, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if there's an easy answer. But if you're third on the tour on Thursday in scoring average and 114th on Sunday, something's going on. That's not just one bad Sunday. There's some sort of hurdle that you need to get over, whether it's mental or physical or whatever the case may be.
Well, that's the 25% that he needs to figure out.
Mental or physical?
I think it's all mental with him. Yes. And so I was hosting Golf Central for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and listening to Jordan Spieth's post-round press conferences on Friday and Saturday, they were far different than Jason Kokrak. You would have thought that Jason Kokrak had won 12 times, not Jordan Spieth. And it was interesting. I asked the guys beside me going into Sunday, Saturday night, it's like, who's going to win this? Is it Spieth who's one shot ahead, or Kokrak who's one behind? Is it Spieth, who is a three-time major champion, who's probably a lock for the World Golf Hall of Fame? Or is it Jason Kokrak, who's 9 years older and is looking for his second victory? And every one of them is at Kokrak. All because of the way Jason was talking. He's like, I feel good about my game. I'm confident. I know I've got what it takes. I'm going to be there. And Jordan was still kind of talking. It's like, hey, this is still a process. I wasn't quite hitting it like I wanted to, but my putter saved me, you know, and that those. So I think that's the 25%. I think he needs a little more of an attitude like Jason Kokrak heading into that final round, and not going in with confidence and not let fear of failing be a bit of a motivator, either consciously or subconsciously. But that's just me. Obviously, who am I to tell Jordan Spieth what to do? But I mean, I'm just observing. But I am not concerned about him. I think when he came out at Torrey Pines, even though he missed the cut, I mean, he was talking in a different language than he was in 2020. He was like, hey, I'm stronger. I'm mentally, physically. I know that I am just a millimeter away from being that same confident yet cocky player that I was years ago. And I haven't forgotten how to do this, and it's going to happen. And sure enough, after that missed cut at Torrey, he just went on this tear. So yeah, I think you're right. It is a little bit of an obstacle he needs to get over, but I don't think he's that far away.
Well, to your point, I think you can only rank confidence in this game, right? It doesn't matter. Yeah. Because you're only as good as your last score, right? I mean, that's just the way it works out. Unless you're named Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson.
Even him, would you say? I mean, do you think Tiger always felt like, hey, I'm as great as I'm going to be right now?
No. I think he always felt like, I mean, it's why he did what he did. It's what drove him. It's why
exactly.
He would, it's why he bounced from swing coach to swing coach. Jack talked about it this afternoon, that one of the craziest things he's ever seen in the game is Tiger wins the U.S. Open in 2000 at Pebble Beach by 15 strokes and goes and tries to change his swing. I can see in Jack's mind how that didn't add up. However, it's the same DNA that made Tiger Tiger. I mean, there's a reason why someone like that is Tiger Woods. So I totally get it. And in your opinion, looking at the field this week, and it's a stacked field as we get sort of seem to ramp up as we get further and further into the summertime, who needs a bigger week? Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth? Or I even throw Rory in there, because that's going to be my answer.
Who needs a bigger week? Those three, I would probably say Justin Thomas right now. Just because it's been a turbulent 2021 for him on and off the golf course. And I feel like he felt he turned the corner when he won the Players. And I hear what you can probably say the same thing with Rory, but Rory's was more recent. I think Justin, after winning the Players, just hasn't really gotten performances that he has wanted or expected. So I think he would like to have a top five finish heading into US Open. I think that would give him that little extra edge that he needs.
Jack was in the media center, we were saying earlier today, and he was talking about all the changes. Essentially, Muirfield Village has gone through a complete reboot. I mean, it started humbly with them just wanting to maybe regrass the greens, and eventually the way it ballooned into, they just dug up the golf course and started over, at least to hear Jack describe it. The one thing that I found interesting, when you go through all that, which I'm sure came with no small price tag, his answer to, what do you think the winning score is going to be? He kind of shrugged and said, about the same.
Like, he actually said it's going to be easier this year.
Yeah, he said he thought it's going to be easier. He said give it 2 or 3 years for it to grow in and then get an idea of exactly what the golf course is. But like one of the changes stood out to me, and only because I flew here this morning from Orlando, and I sat next to Russell Knox on the plane here. And it was a fascinating conversation. Russell Knox is clearly one of the mid-length guys on the PGA Tour, and we kind of spoke at length about, are there certain golf courses where the mid-length guys simply can't compete? Because I remember asking Webb Simpson this at Kiawa Island. And at first, Webb's answer on Wednesday was, yes, absolutely, I can. I have to do everything perfect. My guess is by the time Sunday came around, he had changed his opinion a little bit based on how, you know, he played and the leaderboard shook out, everything else that went into it. That being said, the 15th hole, which kind of you drive into a big hill and then it sort of dips back down to the green, this was one of the things Russell was kind of complaining about. Jack has taken that fairway and lowered it by 20 feet based entirely on, he saw that the longer guys were getting a disproportionate advantage, that if you could carry that hill and hit it on the backside, you were going to get 60 yards of roll and you were going to have a 9-iron in. Whereas the mid-length guys were going to hit straight into the hill. They were going to have an uphill lie and a long iron, let's be honest, or maybe even more than that. And I just love the way his mind went to Jack, who is one of the longest in his day by far. His mind went to, no, we need to make it fair for everyone, just not the bombers.
Right. Not only that, but guys would hit into that hill, and if it was fast and firm here, the ball would roll backwards 20 to 30 yards. I think that's great. I think it's phenomenal. And the fact that even though he has, in essence, made that hole shorter, he has, as you'll see when you watch the tournament this week, he's pulled a creek. He's rerouted a creek now, so it's close to the green. So if you're off, you could be in the penalty area. But you're right. I mean, I think it is fascinating that Jack is timely enough, worldly enough, engaged enough in the game of the world's greatest players to understand that although length will always be an advantage, it shouldn't be such a great advantage like it was on 15.
Very good. All right, before I get you out of here, Monday's a big day for both you and I. Golf's longest day is back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Qualifying. Did you forget about that? You looked at me like you hadn't even processed that.
Yeah. You know, I haven't forgot about it. It's a quarter, man. It's whew, big, huge. It's like, you know, on the matinee in my head.
No. You definitely had that look of, oh, yeah, that's Monday, isn't it? At least you're not here. Look at, you're not answering that. At least you're here. You got this site in Columbus. I'm going to Springfield.
Sounds like you're complaining.
No, I think I'm going to like Springfield.
Springfield's
do
a
very well there.
Great spot. Well, then if you're not complaining, then why did you say, at least you're here?
You don't have to change rooms is what I was saying.
Oh, okay. So that is a complaint. All right. Well, okay. All right. You're right. I don't have to change rooms. Go ahead.
I'm trying to get your idea on, we've done this golf's longest day before. Give me your best story to set up golf's longest day this year.
Actually, I've only done it once. I got two stories from the one that I did. There was a player that showed up. He's an Aussie player, played on tour. Garner? Yeah, I forget his name. Gosh, he's not on tour anymore. Anyway, his sticks got lost in transit, be an airplane, which happens a lot, by the way, more than you think. And the club at the lakes, the pros grabbed out of two bags some clubs. Scott Gardner, that's who it is, and grabbed some clubs out of 2 or 3 bags, made some kind of mishmash set for him, and he went out and shot 64. So that was amazing. And that same, he unfortunately played terribly on the back and he didn't make it through, or his second, not 18, I should say. And then Steve Flesh was in a playoff, and he had his son Griffin with him on the bag, and they were playing in the playoff and they didn't get the spot, but the USGA said, hey, keep playing on this other playoff for the possibility of them being an alternate in the US Open. And Flesh walked off the group. He's like, nah, if I can't get in it that way, I'm not in. So he just walked off and left. So those were the, and that was the one and only time actually I covered Golf's Longest Day. So I guess those two stories. Surely you have many.
That was Steve not being self-aware, because usually the alternate here at the Columbus site gets through, because this is obviously the deepest of the fields. Yeah, because you have most.
If I'm not mistaken, again, this was how many years ago? This was 4 or 5 years ago, 5 years ago minimum. Actually 6 years ago. If I'm not mistaken, they would have to come back the next day for a playoff to be an alternate. Probably. And Steve didn't want to have anything to do with that.
No, I remember, and I was doing, it was a Columbus when I was here. And I remember Robert Streb finished up early, his second round earlier than most. So around 5 o'clock, and he was whatever, let's say, call it 3 under. And I said hello to him as he signed his card, and he stomps towards the parking lot. And I asked his caddy, Catman, I'm like, you guys are going to hang around, right? And he goes, no, we're done. And I go, well, it's like the number's right at 3 right now. You guys are at least going to get in the playoffs. He's like, you probably should hang around. And he goes, no, we're done. And so he leaves. And about an hour later, I'm still looking at the board. And Catman texts me and he goes, hey, just out of curiosity, where's the number? And I go, it's still 3. And so he literally had to, they went across the street. So there's a Tim Hortons. I think you've probably eaten there. And he made him sit and eat in the Hortons until the final numbers came in, and he ended up getting it.
Oh, he was in the playoff and he got in.
Yes, yes.
How about
that? He was going to stomp to the airport. He was done. Yep. No way I'm getting that.
So he ate meatloaf and mashed potatoes, went back out, and boom, there you go.
That's the highlight of the story right there.
You know what,
potatoes, apple pie. That's the highlight of the story.
It's good stuff. You know what? I find it's got to be so stressful for these guys here in Columbus, and the fact that they're two different golf courses. It's not the case in all these other final sites, but they're two different golf courses that are probably close to a half hour apart. I mean, you are just, you know, you got to get from one place to the next and just pray there's no traffic issue. That's more stress, I feel like, for those guys.
It is hard. You want to drop your bucket list? Give a little love to Scioto. I believe you had a chance to sneak out this week.
I mean, you love Scioto, don't you? You love Scioto.
We all love. I wish the qualifier was there. I'm sure the players wish the qualifier was there. Oh, it's such a good course.
Yeah, it's a great course. Scioto is an awesome golf course. Got a chance to play yesterday. I walked 18 holes. My goodness. So last time you walked 18 holes?
I walk 18 holes with my son every time we play. I make him walk. That's the whole point. So I'm probably not the great example. The better example would be, when's the last time you walked 18 holes?
That's a fair point. It's been a while, and I had to get up at 5 a.m. to get a flight from LaGuardia out here to Columbus, so that was a contributing factor. By the time I got to the 13th or 14th hole, I was just, please, God, let this death march in. But I'm old, I'm old, man. I'm 53. Oh, wait a minute.
That's right. Here we go.
You're older than me. Oh, that's wait right. a minute. Stand Sneaking by. Up on it. Stand 54. By. Yeah. Rex Hoggard's going to be 54 this Sunday. 54 this Sunday, am I correct?
No, that's not right.
Dang it.
Sunday's not. I'm the 10th. Today's the first, so it would be.
You're right. It's not
next
Wednesday.
Right. Oh, okay. Next Wednesday, right? Sorry. No, I have a whole nother podcast.
No, it's next Thursday.
Next Thursday. That sounds.
There you go.
Right.
And my birthday. See, this, we're kindred spirits. I'll turn 54 on the 13th, 3 days later.
That you'll be in San Diego for the U.S. Open, correct?
No, I'll be in beautiful Stamford, Connecticut, hosting Golf Central. Then I fly to San Diego that Monday, the 14th.
That's a glamorous life for you, pal. And you sound tired. So.
And as you wait on the, what are you doing for your birthday?
I'll be home. Actually, I'm very rarely home, so I'm sure
pool
that
party.
They have a huge party planned for me. Like I had a party for my middle son who graduated high school last week. I'm sure it'll be just like that.
I can't wait for the parents to leave.
Can't wait for the parents to leave. That's a good thing. All right, I'm going to let you get out of here. Next time, you know what? I just realized this. Like, you are the professional broadcaster. Like, you're the professional. I can't believe that I even, like, why did I even do all that? Like, next time, your second time around, you get the keys to the car. So if you want to stop, brake, turn left, you can do whatever you just need to do, right?
No, I mean, sometimes people want to hear from the everyman, not the professional.
That's right. And I'll take that. That'll do it for this edition of Golf Central Podcast presented by Callaway Golf. We'll see you next week.